You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters.
Episode 10, The Biodynamic Summer, with host Linda Borgi and guest Stuart Lundy.
Well, hello there. Linda Borgi here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? I'm sure you're hearing more and more because we're showing up in a lot more places. Boy, how exciting is this life we're living right now? Thrilling for me. Honest to goodness gracious. Well, I have a great guest on the line today, and we will be speaking about my very favorite topic, and that is biodynamic agriculture. Yes, yes, yes. Those of you that know me know that I have been eating and breathing and sleeping biodynamics for quite some time now, and it is so refreshing to have younger people. Now, I'm 62. Much younger people who are so well versed in this topic. And Stuart Lundy is that person. Now, Stuart, it has been on our podcast before, and we're going to have him on quite a bit. And this is our season of summer. So he's going to be speaking about what it's like biodynamically in the summer. Stuart, are you there?
I'm here.
So there you go, Stuart. That's a little brief introduction. I don't want to take up another second. I want you to just take the floor and let everybody know about some of the things that happen seasonally within biodynamic agriculture.
All right. Well, the breathing and the seasons on biodynamics is really, I mean, it really is central to how you think about what you're going to tend, how you're going to spray, and really everything else. And like you said, now it's summer and the earth is breathing out. And I can take a step back a little to just a cycle within a day, because a lot of people, it's easier sometimes with a day. It's that if you go out in the morning, you're going to notice that as the sun hits things, you're going to see if there's any fog or dew, all that starts to steam off. Here on our farm, you can actually see like this like thin layer of cloud that lifts up in the morning. That's actually when everything starts to photosynthesize, the dew starts to rise off, and it's literally breathing out. And you can see that. When you compare an organic farm to an adjacent one, that adjacent one hasn't really started to breathe because it's dead. There's no breathing happening there. So on ours, you actually see this cloud lift off hours before anything happens on the others.
So amazing, isn't it? Now, what, for the listeners, what do you mean the earth breathes?
I mean that there's anything that's alive kind of has a pulse of expansion and contraction. You have your heartbeat, you have got your breathing, and this is something that's true not just of humans and animals, but it's also true of plants. That they have this cycle of the sap comes up to the leaves and then it collects light and it goes down to the roots and goes up and down, but not just plants, but the earth itself does that. And what happens is in the winter, it collects. Often you're going to get water in the winter and it just builds up and just breathes in. It just absorbs more and more. And then as it shifts to spring, you start to get things breathing out. And those, it's not just breathed out in terms of moisture coming off the soil. No, it's actually breathing out in terms of you see it as plants growing up and out of the soil. And once you get into summer, then you start to get fruits and it's at its full breathing out capacity. And at that point, the earth is almost exhausted. It's almost like you completely spent a full lung of air and it's up and out as the plants. And once you tip to fall, things start to come back down in order to decompose, and the earth takes another deep breath in order to prepare for the next year.
Now, let me ask you this question. What about the other side of the earth, like Australia and New Zealand, when they're opposite of what our winter and summer would be?
Exactly, yeah. When we're breathing in up here in the northern hemisphere, in the southern, they're breathing out. And that basically there's this rhythm, and we serve as kind of opposite organs. back and forth, and there's this gentle exchange that happens energetically between both sides of the world. And then you get places that are more or less permanent, like at the equator, where it's basically perpetually summer. And then you get the Antarctic, which is like perpetual winter. But these two temperate zones, when it's winter in one, it's summer in the other, and there's one's breathing in, the other's breathing out, and that's consistent all year round.
So that also goes in line with energies as well, right? So in the winter, the Earth's energies would be on the inside of her. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's exactly how I think about it. I think about it as, you know, you get a little less in terms of the hours of sunlight that you see, but the sun's sending the exact same amount of energy to the Earth. And the way I think about it is that, you know, it gets cold. It feels cold, so it feels like there's less energy. But the plants then, because they get a little chilled, they're not growing as much. A lot of them have dropped their leaves, so they're not photosynthesizing. But the sun is still sending the same amount of energy at the Earth. It's just at a different angle. And because it spends more time below the horizon, when it's winter, all of that energy is going into the soil. And act like you said, that life is down there in the winter in the Earth, under the Earth. Actually, the soil below the Earth in winter is warmer than it is in summer.
That's because of the breath.
Yep, it's breathed in, and there's more energy there, and that's where it's active. It's active when the Earth is active when it looks. You look out on your farm, and it appears everything on the surface has died back. No, everything it's happening. I mean, they're in business underground. They're going gangbusters down there.
It's happening. It's the place to be. So how does that relate to biodynamic agriculture?
Well, to me, it's you have the biodynamic corn manure or cold preparation 500, which you bury through the winter, which in my mind, it just cycles in there during that time where everything's alive in the soil. Whereas in the summer, when it, you know, tends to dry out, all of that goes dormant and it's exhaled it into the plant. So when you put the 500 there and bury it over winter, it gets energized and digested in a really special way. And what you use that one for is you spray that out in the evening of the day, which harmonizes with the kind of time you put it into the ground, which is the evening of the year. And when you spray it out in the evening of the day, the Earth has a kind of a shallow inbreathing every day. Every day there's dew that settles and the Earth breathes in a little bit. And every day in the morning, it breathes out a little bit. But you spray out the horn manure, which is specially designed for that, to be pulled into the ground in order to help with that breathing cycle, just like you said. And then in the summer, you have a silica spray, which is what you spray up at the plants and the atmosphere around the plants. And I like to think of it as little like quartz crystals, almost like prisms or like little magnifying glasses that you spray around the plants. And it's not exactly how it works, but it's a good image. It focuses the light there and amplifies it. And that you spray that out in the morning when the dew is evaporating up and out and away from the plant. And you do that with basically, it's like glass. It really is, because glass is silica. You spray this powder out and it focuses all the light to the plant as things are evaporating and really just helps it stand taller.
And then also with the silica spray, that is buried in the earth. Is that not correct?
It is. And it's specifically buried in the earth during the summer when the earth dies out most. Because things tend to go dormant when things dry out in the summer. And that's the time that you put the horn silica in the ground and let it, you know, cure or whatever term you want to use.
Ferment. It's very interesting with the horn manure preparation because it goes in really kind of sloppy, right? And when it comes out, it's a rich humus crumble.
It is. You take a green, sloppy kind of.
It's sloppy.
it's a mess at first.
It is.
And you put it in, and by the time it comes comes out, it's totally transformed into something that is this really dark brown, not quite black, but almost. And if there's any smell at all, it's this sweet, earthy richness. And you know that it's worked. And like it's exactly the kind of soil you want your farm to be. And that's why you use it, because you're telling it, here's what I want. And you can think of it in terms of enzymes or microbes or bacteria, whatever you need, or energy, because at any level, it's going to involve all of those things. And it's telling the soil, this is what you want it to be. And you've got to, it's got to come from somewhere.
Well, you know, when it's, and it's so homeopathic in nature. I mean, for those of the listeners that remember my farm in Walker Valley, New York, that was built on a quartzite ridge. I mean, there was some soil in between the boulders and the rocks, but not a heck of a lot. And any soil that was there was hard pan. I mean, really hard pan. But I knew through the spraying of the sprays that I was going to be able to grow soil. And that's exactly what happened. And something that's, and it happened really quickly for me. It happened in 6 months, but something that went by my eyes just last week, Hugh Lovell, which is an expert in the area of biodynamics, there were two pages that were taken out of his book, and it kind of explained what happened to me in Walker Valley. What it said was that biodynamics is definitely not guaranteed. That it has a major part of it has to do with the thoughts or the intention of the person that's actually applying it. So there you go. There you go back to water. Because for me, my mantra has been food and water, everyone, every day, forever. I mean, that's all I've said my entire life, but it's always been what kind of food and what kind of water. So why don't you tell the listeners? So now we have this horn manure, right? That's come out of the earth when the earth was really busy. It was so busy that it digested that slop and turned it into rich, rich humus-like structure. And in some cases, it comes out in the shape of the horn in its entirety, solid. What do you do with that after you have that?
What you do with that is you put it into water, the best water you can get, ideally rainwater, slightly warmed, and you stir that. And the thing is with humus is that humus is not water soluble. If you've ever seen a demonstration of someone pouring water through good organic soil versus one that, you know, doesn't have any organic matter, one with organic soil, the water comes out clear, whereas water from, you know, a pulverized soil, just, it's just mud. And the problem is you're trying to mix a really good high quality humus in the horn manure into water, which it doesn't want to dissolve. So how do you do that? Well, you've got to mix it, stir it long enough. And for me, that's what the prescription of a full hour really makes sure that you do, because you get suspended a non-soluble humus colloid out into water, which it doesn't want to dissolve into. But by doing that, what you've done is you've suspended it in equal distribution, everything that's in it, the energy that's in it, the enzymes that are in it, the microbes that are in it. And then in the evening, when there's that blanket of dew that likes to settle, you're spraying that out. The earth breathes that in. And if you want to think about it in terms of microbes, because there are plenty of microbes in it, it's not just that, but often that's a good entry point for people, is that a single bacterium cell can theoretically multiply from one cell to 1 billion in only 10 hours, given the right conditions. So when you spray, you don't have to be, you know, dogmatic about where it hits, because if you're spraying at the right time with the right intention, it's going to take care of that for you. And it's wild what you can get done with that.
And you could spray in many different ways. You could spray with your hand, you could spray with a stick, or you could spray with a brewer. And I have sprayed many a 5-gallon pail of biodynamic preparations. And I'll tell you that the water for me, and because I am so focused. Now, you're there for an hour and you're stirring in one direction, forming a vortex, and then causing chaos and stirring in the other direction. And you're there for an hour and you really get a chance to focus your mind. It's really, I so look forward to stirring. And what I've noticed through my years of stirring is the water actually changes viscosity from the beginning of the stir to the end of the stir. Now, I am so not scientific. It's not even funny. In fact, when people start talking about cation ratios or boron, I don't know, my ear balls just shut right up, but they really do. But I always felt that it was all the thoughts I was planting into that water, because water is impressionable. Water has memory. And Dr. Emoto, I mean, I think he's given the world enough proof that that really is a factual matter, you know? So why would my thoughts into this water puff it up a little bit more? But then I know scientifically it's because the water gets wetter, its implosion, it opens up to itself. So
I tried the Emoto's rice water experiment, where I took a cup of rice, put it into three different jars, sealed each one with water, and to one you say something positive every day, to one you say something negative, and to the third you ignore. And you just do that for about a month. By the time I came back and then I opened them at the end, I mean, you'd expect something anaerobic to smell bad after a month. Well, the one that was positive, where I'd say thank you or I love you or something, it actually smelled sweet and was bubbling. It smelled like rice wine.
Wow.
The one that I'd said mean things to had this like green funk on it and didn't smell good. Now, this is the catch. It's that the one that you ignore, the one I'd ignored, when we opened it up, this cloud of black came up, went into my lungs. I went into a coughing fit and didn't shake the cough for over 2 weeks.
Whoa.
Yeah, it tells you, like, energy of positive or negative. No, ignoring people and apathy is way more harmful.
Oh, dear Lord. And well, I've known this for quite some time. So my thoughts, when I am spraying my 5 gallons of, I call it Java juice, because that's what it is for me. It's my Java juice. No matter what I put in my, I have a crystal toning bowl, the crown chakra. That's my stirring bowl. And I, whatever I'm stirring in there, I plant the intentions that this country is going to be drenched in these preparations. That is my vision, that everyone, because everyone that's listening to this right now, everyone can participate, right? Can't they, Stuart? It's really not, you don't have to be a physics professor in order to spray biodynamically now, do you?
Absolutely. And that's what you're touching on. It's literally something I've been thinking about this week. But if you want to do this stuff, you don't have to have a perfect understanding of how it works, but a clear intention of what you want it to do. Really, right. I mean, because I think someone with a strong enough intention would almost be able to stir just pure water and have a positive effect, because that's what Emoto's experiments have shown. But you do that with a carrier like something of the biodynamic preparations. It's kind of why different people have different interpretations of the biodynamic preparations. They don't all agree, but they all seem to get results. But I think that's because each person has a slightly different concept, which limits their expectation, which then colors their intention that they're putting into the water. So I don't doubt anyone's results in biodynamics. It's just the disagreements and interpretations determines how you're going to see your results. So if you have the intention, you can use these things. And really, the worst way to use them is to not use them at all.
Well, that's definitely it, because everywhere that I've lived, and I've lived in many different locations, everywhere that I have sprayed, it has opened that cosmic door. It has opened up energies that are not in my neighbor's yards. They're not there. So I want them to be in my neighbor's yards. And, you know, that's what this podcasting is all about, to encourage you to take action, to get your will in order and take action and, you know, email us or whatever. We'll give you some action steps at the end. How's that sound, Stuart?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's one of the things I do here is I make what's called a barrel compound, which is kind of like the horn manure. Just it's not as good as that. It's just it's more of an everyday sort of compost tea or something. But I make it, and like right now I've got about enough to treat 1,000 acres that we've made. And I never sell the stuff. I only give it away, because what I want is for people. The only thing I ask is, when I give it, that people make their own and then give it to somebody else.
Right.
And just send me a sample of theirs so I can compare it, because, you know, just I want them to pass it on. And because, I don't have 1,000 acres. We have 50. That's way more than I'm ever going to use. So, deliberately making more than I need, and deliberately making more than I ever can use, because I want it to overflow. And so, like you said, we're going to spray the country.
We're going to spray the country and then the world. It really is such an energy shifter. It really makes you happy. I mean, I just am so in awe of the transformation, even right where I am here in Beaufort, South Carolina, right? I landed here, and this is 100% sand. The only thing that was on this property were fire ant drilling holes. That's all that there was. And this is a residential property, right? So no lactating cows. I couldn't just order a dump truck of cow manure, you know, lactating cow manure. So, I started a vermicomposting bin to start getting some worm poop, because I'm so connected to poop, man. I just love poop, bat poop, worm poop, cow poop, goat poop. I love it. So, but I knew that with spraying the sprays, first thing I sprayed was the Pfeiffer Field spray, because that has everything in it. And that kind of opens up all those doors, you know. And then I started spraying compost tea in a box, like it was going out of style, from Evan Foles, microbemakers.com, stirring that like every 3 days, you know, and bringing in organic material, because, you know, I could put microbes out there as much as I wanted to, right? But if there was no organic material, if it was all sand, they're going to starve to death. And I'm Italian. We don't starve people to death. We feed them to death. We don't starve them to death. So I went out, I started buying, you know, bags of whatever I could, cow manure in bags, black cow, this and that, just something for the microbes to feast on. Well, today, and this was just last season, today, oh boy, I have morning glories and zinnias and sunflowers and peppers. And why? I think it's because the intention that I put into that water is strong, is very strong. It's my time. It's my time with me. It's my time that I'm able to stir into that water what I want to manifest. And it's happening quicker and quicker. But I don't want to take up any more time. Stuart, tell us about what it's like on your farm in the summer. What's your schedule like, your spraying schedule? Or what are you growing? What do you have right now? That's all, because now the spring flush is over, right? And now we settle in a little bit, right?
It is, yeah. We've got squash. We've got tomatoes coming on. We've got cucumbers and zucchini, and we've got a salad mix that we grow all through the season. We select varieties that are tolerant of the heat, and we've got a bit of everything. We've got herbs coming on, basil coming on, and but we still have to do some maintenance sprays. So the one that we mentioned earlier, the silica spray, that's one to do, you know, from time to time before the fruit is fully ripened, especially. But so one thing I do is basically every week I do a fermented equisetum spray on our plants, and that just keeps them going and pushing through. They photosynthesize better. They stand taller. They're proud to be plants, and it's a wonderful spray that I cannot recommend enough because of all of its diverse properties. And another thing I do, which a lot of people wouldn't do themselves, is that I take all the suckers from our tomato plants, anything extra, and I ferment them for a couple weeks. And then I stir that and spray all that back on the tomatoes themselves. And what that does is all of the nutrients that were in the suckers, that and all that life force, I'm able to catch and put right back onto the plants, so none of it's lost. And some people say, well, what about disease? And the thing is that, all right, you put a little more pressure on things. And, you know, a couple of them won't like it. But what you end up doing by putting that little bit of extra pressure is that you weed out a couple of the weaker ones. And then what you're really doing is you're putting so much selective pressure on them that you're breeding basically super tomatoes. And so that's something we're doing right now almost every week. And I'm mixing that in with the fermented Equisetum arvense. And we're spraying that all over all the tomatoes. And honestly, like a couple don't look good. But I really say it's probably about two or three out of a couple hundred. And the rest are standing another foot taller by the next week. Like they're thrilled. And that's what we're doing right now. It is just, yeah, I will say that as it heats up and things start to expand and the earth out breathing, things can get a little smellier on a farm than they might another part of the year. And that's why we do a regular spray of a barrel compound behind wherever our animals have been. But here's the thing. I ran out of it because I gave all my finished product away.
Oh, God,
to people.
Oh, mama.
So, you know, I was like, okay, we can survive without it for, you know, a couple of weeks. Well, it started to get strong because what we use is really, really well-aged cow manure, and it's got volcanic rock in it and eggshell and all the preps. And it's such a balanced, sweet-smelling thing that, you know, our farm doesn't smell like pigs. It doesn't smell like sheep. It's got this just beautiful, neutral meadow smell. Well, a few weeks of not using that, I start to smell strong pig over here, start to smell strong sheep over here. So yesterday we did another spray, and it's already neutralizing. And the thing is, yeah, you need it. If you don't have a cow, you need this stuff because it just keeps the whole area balanced. And that's something I hadn't experienced like that really until this very week.
So amazing, isn't it? And before we close out for today, because we have a few more topics that we're going to talk about, you know, on future podcasts, I would like you to tell us a little bit about planting by a calendar.
Oh yeah. Planting by a calendar is something that we pay a lot of attention to going into the spring and planting for the fall garden. But in the summer, it becomes a tending manual. It's like, so the idea is that there are just certain streams of energy that are flowing for the cosmos all the time. Light comes down, and we know we can look at a star now, analyze the light, and we know what kind of light is coming to us and what the chemical components are in that star, which means the light coming here has some relation to very specific elements, very specific kinds of energy. So when the moon's in particular places or the sun's in particular places, it's good to tend fruit plants. It's good to tend leafy plants. It's good to tend roots. It's good to tend flowers. So what we try to do is to stick with fruit things specifically for our tomatoes and for our squash, and just kind of rotate through. And it sounds odd to have this rhythm of working with one kind of plant for certain days, another for another, but really what it does is it breaks it all up and you get into this really natural rhythm. And honestly, it helps organize what you're going to do through the week. And you don't just get caught up on one thing and forget something else because it's a root day. Well, what root things need tending? It actually helps generate a balanced garden and a balanced diet, because you're not just going to stick with only tomatoes or whatever else you might particularly like.
And all of these things that we're mentioning today, I will put links in the show notes. They can all be had by calling Josephine Porter Institute in Woolwine, Virginia. They, I believe, are the only not-for-profit that sell the preps, right, Stuart?
Yes, there are two others that are not-for-profits, but yeah, I think they are the only not-for-profit place that sells them in North America.
Right. And so especially if you're on the East Coast, that would be, you know, regional. That would be great. But the best situation is for you to start making a few of your own. And yeah. Stuart is going to have some workshops. He's going to be having a workshop in October, and we'll get more into that in our fall episode. But he is actually doing the horn manures, and I will be there on his farm, and we'll film it via Facebook Live for an event. So you'll all be able to participate in the making of the horn manure preparation. Isn't that something? The miracles of modern technology. I tell you, I still can't figure out how the paper goes through the fax machine wire, let alone all of this, but I'm going with it. I'm going with it big time. Well, thank you once again, Stuart Lundy, especially now you're so busy. I really appreciate you taking this time, away from your farming to educate us a little bit.
No, I'm glad to. I'm happy to. I love to see other people farming, but really more than anything, I love to see people gardening and growing their own food.
Well, thanks again, honey, and I'll see you on the flip side, everyone. And until then, go farm your yard.
Next on the Farmyard Podcast, Farming Intentionally with host Linda Borgi. This podcast is community supported. We thank everyone for tuning in. And a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farm A Yard, all one word, on patreon.com.